Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The Confederation of African Football, CAF, has announced the shortlists for its annual awards ceremony on January 4th in Accra, Ghana. During Monday's show, I mentioned how the big prize to be handed out in Ghana's capital is for the African Player of the Year for 2017. The three finalists are Mohamed Salah of Egypt and Liverpool, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Gabon and Borussia Dortmund, and Sadio Mane of Senegal and Liverpool. Also on Monday's program, reporter Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori in Accra had a chance to talk with Kwesi Appiah, the head coach of Ghana's national football team, the Black Stars. Coach Appiah tells Kwabena he's picking Salah to earn the biggest accolades on January 4th in Accra.
Personally, I think Salah has done well this year. In the method that at the club side, you know, he's doing so great for Liverpool. And then with the national team, you know, most of the goals, either he scores or he assists. And, you know, he's been able to, you know, take them to the World Cup.
A total of 7 awards will be given out in Ghana at the CAF Awards ceremony. The 3 I didn't mention during Monday's show are African Youth Player of the Year, African Club of the Year, and African Women's National Team of the Year. The 3 finalists for Youth Player of the Year are Crepin Diata of Senegal and the Norwegian club Sarpsborg, Patson Daka of Zambia and the Austrian club Liefering, and Salem Gidou of Mali and the Malian club Guidars. The 3 finalists for Club of the Year are Al Ahly of Egypt, TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco. And the 3 finalists for African Women's National Team of the Year are Ghana's under-20 team, Nigeria's under-20 team, and South Africa's senior national team. Meanwhile, New Zealand international Jeremy Brockie, a striker for the South African club SuperSport United, says he had no idea that CAF scrapped their Africa-based Player of the Year award. The 30-year-old Brockie was the first ever overseas player to be included on a CAF shortlist, and he was one of the final 10 names announced last month. On Monday, CAF announced the final nominees for 7 awards, adding that Africa-based Player of the Year and Referee of the Year had been removed from the list of prizes. Brockie says he went online about an hour or two after the nominations were announced by CAF, and he was quite surprised when he found out there was no longer an Africa-based Player of the Year award. Brockie was the top scorer with 10 goals in this year's CAF Confederation Cup tournament, Africa's second-tier club competition. Brockie also helped SuperSport United reach the final of the CAF Confederation Cup, where they lost on aggregate 2-1 to TP Mazembe. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, we'll hear from Kenya's Olympic champion marathon runner, Eliud Kipchoge. To African athletics, Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya ran this year's fastest time for the marathon distance. The 33-year-old Kipchoge clocked 2 hours and 25 seconds in Monza, Italy, more than 2 minutes faster than the world record. But it didn't go into the books as an official world record. Kipchoge's run was sponsored by Nike, which had special variables in place, like pacers entering mid-race on Monza's fast oval track and drinks being given to runners via mopeds. More than 4 months after his run in Italy, Eliud Kipchoge traveled to Germany and in rainy conditions won the 44th BMW Marathon in 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 32 seconds. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2017, let's listen in again to Eliud Kipchoge's post-race interview with the energetic Andy Edwards in Berlin, Germany. Here's Andy.
I'm with the men's champion of the BMW Berlin Marathon 2017. That's Eliud Kipchoge. A fascinating race, a race which turned out, in a sense, to have so many surprises. Eliud, just thinking about Berlin, you've run here twice, you've won here twice in different conditions. Are you tempted to come back a third time and, well, maybe have another go at breaking the world record?
Thank you once again. Absolutely, I'd love to come back for the next time to try to break a world record, because I was coming for a world record, but due to a fight of circumstances, then the way that changed mysteriously, yes.
2017 has been, shall we say, an interesting year for you, because it's been unusual. I mean, the Monza, the marathon, running that distance, just 25 seconds outside 2 hours, and now Berlin. What have you learnt from this year? Because it hasn't, may I say, been typical. Because Monza was really going into kind of new territory, I think it's fair to say.
I've learned marathon is life, and anything can happen. You can run today fast, you can run tomorrow slow, but all in all, it's sport, yes.
How did Monza strengthen you? Because you talked about before the Berlin race that it gave you new strength. Was it not just only physically but mentally to be looking at the clock when you cross the line saying 2 hours and 25 seconds?
It gave me a lot of strength mentally. Especially I was very happy when I crossed the finishing line with 2 hours and 25 seconds. And you know, I was running against the unthinkable. And passed the message to the whole world that me and my partner, that's Nike, that we are trying to have no limits in this sport and in any career in this world.
When you talk about no limits, in the history of marathon running, people often talk about top marathoners having a certain amount of very good marathons in their legs. Do you feel you've still got quite a few very good marathons in your legs? Because, of course, we all know you've been running at the top in track before this as well. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely, I still have good marathons in my legs. That's no doubt.
Eliud Kipchoge, champion yet again of the BMW Berlin Marathon. Thanks very much. Thank you, Eliud.
Thank you very much.
For more insight into Eliud Kipchoge's athletic career, the energetic Andy Edwards asked his coach, Patrick Sang, about their relationship.
Incidentally, Eliud and I come from the same village, but I got to know him later. Incidentally, also, his mother was my kindergarten teacher. Since the time I came into contact with Eliud, as a young guy, he used to come to me for a training program. I would do it without asking him where he was from, but eventually I got to know that we were from the same village. From then on, I continued helping him. But what was unique with him from the word go is the fact that he was really keen on improving on performance, his personal performance, even at that early age. That is going back to 2002 when I first worked with him.
It's also struck me as one of the many reporters interviewing Eliud, his mental sharpness. And he said in Berlin 2 years ago how important it was to be mentally fresh. Physical tiredness, you can recover quite quickly. But if you get stale mentally, and it's the way his mind works, and as an observer in a marathon, mentally he seems often to dominate his rivals. Is that a fair comment?
I think it would be a fair comment, and I think it comes from a long history of how he started running, how he values running, and how he wants to take running to the next level.
Was it hard to make the transition to turn Elliot into a marathon runner? Of course, we know about his success on the track, but not everybody makes that change. And he did it, it seems, without a lot of problems.
We had to go through a series of consultation, discussion, and we agreed, and he understood that what it meant to change. Because what we looked at the age where when he was not getting gold medals anymore, we asked ourselves, what is he going to achieve more if he stays on the track? And then we agreed that there was nothing much more to achieve. And then we asked ourselves the next question, would it indeed be better with the talent that he has to try something else? And the consensus was that, you know, it was the right time, the right moment to try something else, and that was trying the marathon business.
Going into Berlin, what did that experience in May in Monza on the Formula One circuit give him? When he ran just outside 2 hours, and of course, a lot of talk, will this be the first sub-2-hour marathon, admittedly in special conditions, but did he gain a lot from that? Did it help him coming into this race?
I think the confidence went up, because first of all, it was something that many people believe it was not possible, but he brought it close to reality. And I'm sure it has given him a lot of confidence going forward to any other marathon that, you know, it's possible. He was able to recover like than any other normal marathon. So I think coming here or going to any other competition, the flexibility to go beyond is already been shown that it's there.
That's Patrick Sang, the coach of Olympic marathon champion Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya. And Coach Sang was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards in Berlin, Germany. Berlin is where Eliud Kipchoge won the BMW Berlin Marathon title. Patrick Sang, for his part, also has a pretty impressive athletic resume. The 53-year-old Sang won a silver medal for Kenya in the men's 3,000-meter steeplechase race at the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. And Patrick also won two silver medals in the steeplechase at the World Championships at Tokyo 1991 and Stuttgart 1993. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars. The hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on The Voice of America.
Keep counting them down, Ray. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association news, the Houston Rockets beat the visiting Utah Jazz Monday night 120-99. To extend their winning streak to 14 games. Eric Gordon scored 17 of his season-high 33 points in the fourth quarter to help power the Rockets. Gordon also finished the game with a season-high 7 three-point shots made. Another explosive Rocket, James Harden, still sporting my favorite beard in basketball, scored 26 points for Houston, while teammate Clint Capella had 24 points and 20 rebounds. The NBA's longest current winning streak has also powered the Rockets to the league's best record, 25 wins and 4 losses. Elsewhere around the NBA, the Los Angeles Lakers retired two, count them, two of Kobe Bryant's numbers, number 8 and number 24, during halftime Monday night of their game against the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors. Now, the Lakers almost pulled off an upset against the Warriors, falling 116 to 114 in overtime. Kevin Durant scored 12 of his 36 points in the overtime period to help lead the Warriors to the victory. Even though he was sitting courtside with his family, Kobe was definitely trending on social media Monday night. Kobe retired in 2016 after spending his entire 20-year career with the Los Angeles Lakers. Kobe won 5 NBA championships and was named to the All-Star team 18 times in what most certainly will be a Hall of Fame career. Kobe Bryant also won gold medals with the USA basketball team at the 2008 Olympics in Beijing and the 2012 Olympics in London. Joining us once again on the show is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty seasonal greetings, Andrew.
Sporty seasonal greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Holiday atmosphere here in the studio, as well as in Los Angeles, I think, for Kobe Bryant's retirement ceremony there.
Yes, you know, if there was going to call this a holiday, we'd maybe call it Mamba Day, because, of course, that is Kobe's nickname. But actually, the first player in National Basketball Association history to have both of his jerseys retired by the same team. Kobe wore number 8 for the first part of his career because he wanted number 24, which is the number he wore in high school, but it wasn't available. So when number 24 did become available in the 2006-2007 NBA season, Kobe made the switch. And as you said, between those two numbers, 5 NBA championships, 18-time All-Star, and the second highest single-game point total in NBA history when he scored a whopping 81 points against the Toronto Raptors in 2006. And if I had to pick a word to describe Kobe, I'd have to go with the one, Sonny, that many people are using on social media, which is legend. And certainly when you look at those stats, they are legendary. I thought this was pretty interesting. One person put this up, that if you split Kobe number 8 jersey and Kobe number 24 jersey into two separate people, they would each have a 99.8% and a 99.9% probability, respectively, of being voted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, according to a metric that they use to determine Hall of Fame likelihood.
So okay.
Not just, you could say that Kobe didn't just have a Hall of Fame career, he had two, if you split him up into those two parts of his Lakers career.
And I think maybe some of our listeners are wondering, Andrew, I know there's a time period you have to wait before you can be eligible for the Basketball Hall of Fame. I think it's 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. So Kobe, I think, will be eligible in 2021, somewhere around
something
there.
Like that. But I don't think there's any question that he will be in as quickly as they can get him in there. Certainly, given his performance so far, he is one of the greats of the game. And that was actually what we saw a lot of last night at the Staples Center and a lot of what was trending. The who's who of not just Lakers basketball, but the who's who of basketball, period, on hand to celebrate Kobe Bryant. Shaquille O'Neal, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the great Bill Russell, all on hand there in Los Angeles. Magic Johnson even going as far as calling Kobe the greatest to ever wear the purple and gold.
Wow, that's quite a statement.
Quite a statement. A lot of fans endorsed that fully, but there was some debate about that on social media. Some fans saying, well, let's not go that far. He's great, but there are some others that we could point to.
Like Kareem.
Yeah, exactly. And the tributes, not just in Los Angeles, but tributes pouring in from some of the current stars of the NBA on social media. Of course, they're all out playing games, so they can't necessarily be there. But I think one of my favorites was in a social media video, James Harden, the best revered in basketball, said he used to rush home from school so he could watch Kobe play. Steph Curry and LeBron James also both unable to be there, but posted congratulatory messages on their social media channels in just amazement that Kobe would not just have two numbers retired, but two for the same team. They said it's something so amazing. So it really speaks to how great a career he has had and how great a person he's been in basketball when you have stars like James Harden, Steph Curry, LeBron James saying that they're in awe of him. I mean, these are the stars of the game today and they're in awe of Kobe Bryant. It really shows where he's staked his claim in basketball history.
And I think, you know, Kobe definitely a unique player, and what makes his career so unique in many respects, Andrew, is the fact that he played for only one club in the current, you know, day of the NBA. Yeah, guys like LeBron James, who he played for the Miami Heat for a while. Now he's back with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Even Kevin Durant, I mentioned him earlier in the show. He began his career with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now he's out west with the Golden State Warriors. So they're not going to have the same legacy, I think, as Kobe being there with just one club.
Yeah, there's some comparison. Kobe played around the same time as Derek Jeter was playing shortstop in Major League Baseball for the New York Yankees, and Jeter stayed his entire 20-plus year career with the Yankees, similarly staking his claim not just for the Yankees but for baseball generally. So there's some there is some kind of cachet, if you will, to being with one club. Certainly for fans of the Lakers, Kobe is much beloved because of his two decades that he spent with the team. And Kobe is feeling the love because he wrote on social media, "Thanks to the Lakers organization and the best fans in the world, you gave a six-year-old boy his Laker dream, and I'll always love you for it." So a nice sentiment that he expressed, giving that gratitude back to the people who helped to get him where he is.
I think I saw one video of Kobe in his final season for the Lakers, Andrew, where he was being helicoptered to a home game from his home. And aren't too many players that get to take the helicopter for the home games.
No, I think that's a pretty good indication of you're in rarefied air at that point.
And you miss out on all that L.A. traffic, too.
Hey, that's the way you got to get through the traffic. I think Kobe would be a deserving person to get that ride.
Well, what else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, yesterday on the show, we talked about Jerry Richardson, the owner of the National Football League's Carolina Panthers. And, of course, he's under investigation for sexual harassment. And as a result of that investigation, as we said yesterday, he has announced that he plans to sell the team at the end of the season. But even before that sale, there's already a big change happening at the top of the team's organization, because the Carolina Panthers have announced that Richardson is stepping away from the day-to-day operations of the team, and replacing him as chief executive officer will be Tina Becker, making her one of the highest-ranking female executives in the National Football League. Becker has said that these are some of the most difficult days of her 19 years with the Panthers, but she's lifted up by the strong resolve and commitment of the employees there and that what they've shown to the organization. She talks about that the team could very well win a Super Bowl this year. She thinks they are Super Bowl caliber, and they are going to do everything they can to continue that team success as they go into the playoffs. A wide majority of experts and fans, Sonny, are praising this move. The Panthers have taken a problem and have turned it into a solution that promotes diversity in the upper ranks of the National Football League leadership. And in fact, Ron Rivera, the coach of the Panthers, called Becker a solid person who has worked her way up and knows the inner workings of the organization. And he said her promotion is a good thing. Now, he mentioned working her way up in the organization. A lot of people pointing out that Becker started with the team 19 years ago as a cheerleader, and she worked her way up through the organization, and now she is the chief operating officer of the team. While there is some people commenting with some sexist comments and saying that she only got it because of her looks or this or that, quite a wide majority of people are saying that it shows not just her hard work to advance, but it shows that if you work hard, you can achieve anything, and certainly she has done that. So she will be managing the team, and we wish her the best of luck in that.
Best of luck indeed. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the December 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to empowering women all over the world. In too many places around the world today, women face barriers. Barriers to equality, to resources, to opportunities, said USAID's Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator of the Bureau for Economic Growth, Education, and Environment, and Senior Coordinator for Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment, Michelle Beckering. It could be a barrier to credit, to the connectivity needed to launch a business. And all too frequently, women are hamstrung by gender-based violence at home or within the community. Gender-based violence takes an enormous toll on women, on girls, on their families, on communities and countries, said Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator Beckering.
Gender-based violence is a pervasive barrier to global security, to women's empowerment, and to economic growth. It is estimated right now that gender-based violence has cost the world more than 5% of its global GDP, having a greater aggregate economic impact than war.
USAID is taking a two-pronged approach to doing away with this scourge, prevention and response. On prevention, we first need to learn what's causing the problem, particularly if the number and severity of incidents spike within a given region. How do natural disasters compound gender-based violence? What about lack of access to natural resources? What is the impact of local laws? As part of a response to the program, we look at the regulatory framework, make sure there are laws that clearly define and punish perpetrators of gender-based violence. Improving girls' education is a step in the right direction, said Ms. Beckering. For every additional year that a girl goes to school, she is less likely to be a victim of gender-based violence. So is improving women's access to digital technologies and ensuring support from local leadership. U.S. Congress appropriates a combined $150 million to the State Department and to USAID for the global effort to address gender-based violence. It also provides appropriations for combating child, early, and forced marriage, which are closely linked to gender-based violence. Since 2012, USAID has provided critical services to over 5 million survivors and persons at risk of gender-based violence. Women and girls, said Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator Beckering, should be safe from the threat of violence in their homes, in their communities, and they should have access to education and health care and opportunities to live up to their full economic potential.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.